Hey out there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 237 Sub B, hard labor. Sub B, because this is the second time that I'm recording it. First time you are going to be listening to any of it. Why? Because I am a colossal idiot. Last night I had this fantastic episode all set up, all ready to go. It was at 12:30. I was towards the end of the usable energy left in my body. And I closed out the program. I was like, oh, why am I doing this? And it said, would you like to save the data? And I, of course, clicked no. And then looked at my computer and stared rather dumbfounded, and then proceeded to work for the next 45 minutes trying to recover that. And then I tried to work for another hour this morning, but you know what? It's all going to be for the better, because you know what? That show, it's crap. You don't need to hear what I was going to say. This show is going to be fantastic. This is Caffeination number 237, the 237th time that I've come on the airwaves, or come on the inner tubes, or whatever you want to call it, and decided to say, hello, hi, how are you? My name is Paul. I am going to be your host for this, the Caffeination Podcast. This is, of course, the hard labor edition, because on the one hand, I've been off all week, so a lot of people are going to kind of scoff at this, and if you look at the bottom of the episode, you're going to see a picture of my quote-unquote office for the week, which has been the grill in the backyard. But on the other hand, I've been doing a lot of work around the house. The caffeination layer was in dire need of repair. You know, can't just have do-gooders wandering around willy-nilly. You have to have the proper traps and everything set. So we were working in the backyard for a good part of the first half of the week. Then we've been working in the boys' new big boy room, working on the front half of the house. A lot of stuff, a lot of real hardcore things to do. But you know what? Most of it's done. I feel really good about the effort that I've put in. And so I think it's time for a little bit of relaxation, a little bit of fun. So, you know, that's what this episode was kind of meant to be. Not a real lot of hard-hitting news. And in fact, we've kind of shifted the format for the episode here around a little bit. We've got rid of the real news bites for right now. But it's going to come back every once in a while, because when it all comes down to it, it's all cruft. And people have asked me periodically, what exactly is cruft? Cruft's internet waste, or not internet waste, it's computer waste. It's junk that you see floating around. It's like old monitors and things like that. So I like to think that this is the junk that I find on the internet. It's like walking through the flea market of life listening to the Caffeination Podcast. So hopefully you're going to enjoy what we got going for you today. On today's show, you can hear about any and all the following topics. You can hear about Vikings, monkeys, robots, coffee, chocolate, keyboards, and beer. A fantastic lineup of stuff. I even have my little notepad here set. We are ready to go. But I got to tell you, it's freaking me out a little bit. It's 9:27 in the morning. I'm recording a podcast. It's bright. It's sunny outside. I have the door open, the birds are tweeting in the background. It's just throwing me off my game here. You know, usually it's nice and dark and dank down here in the lair. That's why it is the Caffeination Lair. But you know what? I feel good, feel energized, had a lot of coffee in me, as you can probably tell at this point in time. So we are ready to tackle this show. We have two sections, of course, like I said, the tech cruft, and then the caffeine and food. We are actually a member of the Tech Podcast Network, so if it's tech, it's here. It's find all the other member shows over at techpodcasts.com. All the other member shows have agreed to create child-safe, family-friendly, and educational content. It is really one of the easiest places to go. If you're interested in news, you want to listen to podcasts in the car, but you have the little tykes running around, you don't want anything a little bit untoward to cross their ears, so it's the easiest way to do it. You just go over there, and it's all family-safe, child-friendly, and educational to boot. So they might learn something cool about server setup or anything else. Heartily suggest you give them a check, see. And last but most certainly not least, we are a Puzzle Piece production. It's actually the parent company of the Caffeination Podcast. It runs a couple of the different things within my web empire. And what better place to run an empire from than the lair? You know what I mean? If you'd like to sign up for our email list, no spam, no anything. The only thing you'll get is if the episode's delayed, you're identified, you're informed, and then you get the show notes direct to your email, including a link to everything. So that's fun. But yeah, you can send an email to caffeination@gmail.com along with all your comments, feedback, suggestion, and hate mail. You can find this episode and all the other ones like it lovingly nestled over at www.caffeination.com. And I've babbled on for long enough. It is time to dive right on into the content here. First up in Tech Cruft, we have a little story about Viking DNA. Yes, some scientists are out there. They're kind of playing around. They're saying, you know what we need? We need to find out more about the Vikings. Yeah, to heck with all the other things that are currently bothering the world. no more curing cancer. We're going to fight the good fight and try and extract some DNA, usable DNA, from Viking skeletons that are over 1,000 years old. There's two very funny things about this story. First of all, the comment section below the article list that it's Slashdot is absolutely hilarious, from references to a Nordic-themed Jurassic Park, entitled, of course, Nordic Park, to different Beowulf cluster jokes and everything like that. If you're at all on the fence about the usefulness that comments can give to things, you need to head on over there. It's fantastic. The other thing that I'm kind of weirded out is that they actually said, this is, of course, from a non-Christian burial site in the Danish island of Funen. I don't care. I mean, I don't know if anybody else out there cares, but I don't care whether or not the burial site was Christian. It's not one of those things that bothers me. If you're going to be exhuming bodies, does it really matter in what manner they were interred? You're still, interrupting somebody's final resting place, because it ain't so final anymore. You're extracting their DNA. Theoretically, you could clone them. That's kind of weird. But it's like one of those things where I understand why they're doing it. They're doing it in order to, first of all, prove that they can. And second of all, because they're trying to find different links to genetic diseases, find out more about the human genome and how it's evolved over the past 1,000 years. So it's kind of an interesting idea to look at off to the side, but I'm not really sure exactly where they're going with it. So it's just going to be kind of an interesting little venue to follow from here on out. Now, the next little thing that we have up here is actually a very useful invention. A bunch of scientists decided to get together and say, you know what we need? This is at the University of California in San Diego. They said, you know what we need? We need some tiny little spray that you can put in your pocket, spray on something, and determine whether or not it's going to explode. I mean, because, it's kind of a useful thing to know. So they've actually developed a explosive detecting spray that has two different colors so far. Hopefully it'll come in more, so that way it'll go with whatever handbag you have at the same time. But if you spray it on something and it contains nitrogen containing explosives, I'm not really sure what that is, or some kind of fluorine copolymer, if that makes any sense to you, it can detect even a billionth of a gram of explosives. So if you happen to walk by an explosives factory and a little dust blows out and lands on you, you too could be detained by the TSA. Now, apparently, if you spray it on, then wipe over with a UV light, you take your little garden variety, a black light, or I think maybe even a shortwave black light, and you just put it over it, and it'll glow blue, which is really useful. And a lot of the problems with some of the explosive detectors that they have right now, and the microphone decides to try and eat itself. A lot of the problems with the explosive detectors that they have right now is that they're all based on vapor. So unless the explosive is exposed to air, or unless it is currently, there's residue on something else where it's actually, vaporizing at that point in time, they're hard to see. I mean, that's how bomb-sniffing dogs. I mean, you can theoretically defeat a bomb-sniffing dog and through all the different devices if you take the proper precautions. With this, even if you get the absolute tiniest trace amount of explosives, it will glow. It will shine like the light of the sun. And the other color that it actually detects, it detects within slightly different limits, something that has, like TNT, nitro aromatic explosives. Gotta love that name, nitro aromatic. It either sounds like some kind of fun perfume or an awesome name for a band. And if you, same little spray, it's right over top of it. Same with the UV light, and it'll glow a nice green yellow. So that way you can tell the difference between explosives. Because if you're looking for a nice fluorine copolymer and they're trying to pass on a nitro aromatic to you, you want to make sure that you understand what exactly is going on. So it's just kind of fun to sit there and see, the fantastic advances that some of these different companies are making in this realm. And there's currently peroxide-based explosives, so, blonde bombers, aren't actually out there, and you can't find a way to detect them right now. But, of course, they're working on a new spray with that. Hopefully they'll hit, the cyan, the magenta, something like that. So more the magenta, maybe, I think. That's the only realm of the spectrum where they really don't have a very distinguishable color. I mean, you don't want to have, a muddy brown or anything that would blend. No, you want to have it nice and out there and bright and say, hey, I'm going to explode if you do the wrong things. So it's just kind of fun to see that and interesting to see exactly where that's going. The next story we have up right here is from over at Joy joystick.com. That's a real fun website if you're into gaming. And I know we've been talking a lot about gaming recently, and I'm not going to dwell on this too much, but there's a real big problem with some of the more current video games that are out there. You know, the Xbox 360, PS3, Nintendo Wii, they're all succumbing to the pressures of creeping featurism. You know, they all have games like Rock Band, SingStar, the Wii Fit, and all this other stuff that has accessories that come with everything. So, I mean, like the Power Glove back in the day, you know, with Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, you could play it without the Power Glove, which was probably good because only like 6 people had them. But, you know, now you have your Guitar Hero guitar and you have your Rock Band guitar, and one works with the other one, but not the other way around. So I think you can't use a Rock Band guitar on Guitar Hero. I think that's how it rolls. I'm not sure, though. And now you have the Rock Band drum set, you have the Dance Dance Revolution party mats, you have the yoga balance board for the Wii Fit, you have the microphone for SingStar, you have a microphone for Rock Band, and you have all these accessories, all of this stuff that's laying around, this cruft, for lack of a better word, and they're all very limited in the games that they can actually do. I keep threatening people online. It's like, you know, one of these times I'm going to play like a round of NHL 08, or I'm going to play some Halo or something like that and use the guitar as a controller. See how well I do. You know, that way I can rock out while I'm killing some aliens. But I don't know if that's actually possible. I don't know if all of the functionality of a normal controller is actually resident within the guitar, or only the things that they deem as needed. So it's always interesting to see when an empire is born. And the Wii Fit is a fantastic game. It's a great idea. And it's not really a game, I would say. Yes, there's fun elements to it, and yes, it does have a lot of entertainment value, but it's much more of a training program. It's a very, very exacting training program. It's unforgiving, to say the least. It measures your BMI. It tells you your weight. It actually plumps up your Mii if you are not in prime physical condition according to your BMI. And I'm not, so I have a plump little Mii and everything out there, but it's really kind of I was hesitant to think about getting it at first, because I was looking at it, I was going, you know, this is going to be a great tool, great training idea, and you know, I've been using it fairly frequently so far, but I don't know if there's going to be anything that ever comes out that actually uses it after this. I mean, because if the only game that they ever came out with is this training program, then okay, fine, I can understand that. And if they're going to come out with version after version, then that's good too. But the problem is there's no cross usage with a lot of games. And Nintendo, if they're one thing, they're very, very good at finding alternative uses for products. You know, like they have the Wiimote that's used in any number of different ways throughout the entire game system. So, and they're also very good at sponsoring the kind of genre of a party game. You know, the Wii console is not necessarily one that most people sit there and play at home alone. They actually sit there, they have people over, they have friends over, people, you know, bring their controllers with them. There's actually a memory chip in the controller to actually store your Mii or your personification of within the game and your user data on the actual controllers, you can carry it with you. So it's a really good idea. They really thought that out. Well, apparently there's a new game called Raving Rabbits TV Party. I've loved all the other games in the series so far, and they're actually going to be using the Wii Balance Board to have some fun games that are in there. I don't know if you're going to be able to do it without the Balance Board. I mean, that would be interesting to see. But I really like the fact that it's actually branching out beyond the little walled garden of, you know, the Nintendo family of stuff. I mean, for instance, you have Activision, which owns Guitar Hero, I think, and or is it Red Octane? I don't know. One company owns Guitar Hero, another company owns Rock Band, and you're not going to be able to use you can't use everything interchangeably, and there's not like a different guitar game that's going to come out, you know, 6 months down the line, or a different game that's going to be able to make use of these. Like, I haven't seen anybody make use of the Dance Dance Revolution mats except for Dance Dance Revolution. So, I mean, I was half expecting to see some kind of like power pad like game, like a running in place kind of game that they had, you know, like a, I don't know, 360 Olympics or something like that. That would have been cool in the use for the power pad, but nothing's come out so far. So I got to hand it off to the guys who are creating Raven Rabbits. This is a fantastic idea in order to expand the user base of your game, because, you know, it might do two things. First, it could introduce new people to the Wii Fit. The people who haven't thought about getting one, they say, hey, you know what, maybe I'll get it because I really like the Raving Rabbits. Or, on the other hand, because they have a wicked sense of humor, I gotta tell you, if you haven't ever seen it, you owe it to yourself to do a search for Raving Rabbits Rabbids commercials. They're hilarious, and they're really wickedly funny. And So you might have, you know, fans of either game, you know, the Wii Fit or fans of the Raving Rabbits who are kind of going to kind of cross there. So it's going to be kind of fun to sit there and play around with. I've talked a little bit about it, that. And speaking of a power pad style thing, if you remember back in the movie Big, they danced on a giant keyboard. Well, this is a different kind of keyboard, but the guys over at Hackaday, which you owe to yourself to actually go over and visit, hackaday.com. It's a fantastic website. They really get down into the nuts and bolts about how to build all the different fun and cool things that they actually have. I mean, that's the idea behind the site. But, you know, before I digress any further, they actually show you how to build a giant cloth keyboard, and it's just really cool. And the only thing I can think of when I'm looking at this, because they have a pair of stocking covered feet walking across this keyboard, so imagine typing like that in one aspect, or imagine taking it one step further and doing like a derivation off the Big theme with typing in like text speak, lol, and I'm gonna stop right there. But it's just, I like this kind of thing. I think it's really cool, so I just thought I'd pass it along. All right, now next up here, there are several things in life that just by the addition of this one item or the addition of this one concept, it makes any product concept, anything that uses it, that much better. Like, music is great, but when you add monkeys to it, except for the actual band, because they were kind of eh, but when you add monkeys to things, they become inherently cooler. They take on a whole new level of awesomeness. The same thing goes for robots, the same thing goes for, you know, cybernetics, the same thing goes for, like, just a bunch of different things. Well, personally for me, anything you add coffee to, almost anything, I'll just put it out there, because I'm pretty sure coffee and some things don't actually mix, but I haven't found anything yet. I'm pretty sure when you add monkeys or you add robots to absolutely anything, they become inherently cooler. However, when you have a confluence of the two uniquely awesome topics coming together, you get what is known only as a perfect storm of awesomeness. That is what we have here today. How about robotic monkeys? Now, there's a story where monkeys are actually controlling, so a little bit of cybernetics here too, controlling robotic arms with their minds. Now, this is all in the realm of prosthesis research, so it's people that are, this is supposed to help people, you know, add real functioning robotic limbs where they lost a limb previously. And what they're doing is they're having monkeys do four very specific and very simple tasks. You know, they have them picking things up, dropping things. And then there was a select group that they actually had trying to feed themselves with the robotic arm. And you know, there was different intuitive things that they did. For instance, when they picked up something sticky, they actually released their grip slightly because the stickiness would actually hold it. So there's a little bit of tactile feedback with it and everything. But before we get too much further, I am going to answer your question here. No, they don't have people walking around hacking off lab monkey arms. The monkeys still have their two usable arms. It's just they're hooked into this machine every once in a while, and it gives them a third robotic arm. Now, this is a bad thing for me, at least. I think monkeys are great. I think robots will one day take over the planet. However, I become very, very hesitant to embrace a concept in which monkeys are given extra appendages, because already it's kind of evident that they could probably kick our tuchus all over the planet at any one point in time if they really chose to. Those damn dirty apes don't need a third arm. They can already grab things with their feet. I mean, their heads and tails literally above us. So it's really kind of cool, and I really kind of applaud this research. But it does seem like it's been done before. I do remember a story a while ago, and I can't find the link. I've actually been trying literally all night to find this link, where a man was actually a telephone or a power line repairman. He was a lineman. He grabbed onto a power line with both arms, and it was electrified at the time. And somehow, through some kind of grounding, both of his arms were damaged beyond repair, and they had to amputate them. So this guy is sitting there without any arms. I mean, everything else is perfectly fine on him. And what they did was they attached two robotic prosthesis to one to either shoulder and attached them to the nerves on his chest, either to move the nerve endings from his shoulder onto his chest or something very similar. And he was able to control these things through his mind. So I think, I don't know if it's a different amount of points of articulation. Yes, the normal human arm has innumerable points of articulation, but these robotic arms that he had only had like four. But he was able to do simple things, like simple and very useful and very basic things, such as pick his granddaughter up, such as paint a house without anybody else helping him. So, I mean, this is a fantastic concept. I really heartily support any use or any investigation further into this. However, you are giving monkeys extra arms, so you do need to take very good care in how these monkeys are actually released after the fact. One small aside here, there are two articles linked up on this, one over at Ars Technica and the other one at DVice. Now, DVice is a very funny site periodically, and they have very short snippets. Ars Technica is a very technical site, and they have longer, more informative articles. So, hence, I gave you the dichotomy that exists within the robot-monkey conundrum, and I gave you both articles. So, if you click on robots, you get the awesome, crazy-looking Terminator with the monkey screaming head, or if you click on the monkey's word over at caffeination.com, then you'll actually be taken to a much more technical article. However, they have an awesome little picture of a monkey with a robotic eye at the bottom, so a little red eye action. But by the way, if a million monkeys and a million typewriters could eventually pound out the works of Shakespeare, exactly how long would it take three-armed robotic monkeys to do the same thing? Would it take them a little bit less time or a little bit more? I don't know. All right, now moving right along, there's a new thing that's up over at DVice. Now, this is just an awesome, awesome story. If you've seen the demo for Windows 7, they're adding multi-touch. They're adding all the components that they actually put into the Microsoft Surface, which is an actual giant screen and a table in the same thing. Things where you could put your phone on it, you could drag movie tickets to it, you could buy movie tickets, you could drag directions to it. And, you know, it's being able to use things, and it's a new advent in the realm of user interface. Think the iPhone, but flatter, bigger, and more functioning, believe it or not. And you take that and you reduce it to its lowest common denominator, and that's what you get here. That's what some people like. They like the Microsoft Surface. They like all that really fun stuff that's out there. But how about we break it down to the beginning of video games? You add two trackpads and a table full of LEDs and just make it pure white. I mean, like old school Apple white. And what you have is a way to control a Pong match through just touching a flat white table, and it is all displayed through the pattern of LEDs that dance across it. So everything's perfectly flat. I could really see this thing kind of making its way into bars and stuff like that. Yes, it's currently only available at the Museum of Modern Art's Elastic Mind exhibit, but I think that this actually has a future, a very commercial future. This could something that could be really a breakout product. I don't know exactly what's going to happen one way or another with it, but I kind of hope that they actually, you know, take it that extra step. And yes, it's very artistic, and they might say, oh, well, it compromises the artistic integrity of it, but we'll see where it goes. I just thought it was really cool, so I thought I'd pass it along. All right, moving right along. Again, another robot story, but this is robots rather for the creative greater good, not creative good. That's not even a word. But it's... It's robots that are actually doing things that humans no longer can. Due to global warming and everything like that, the scientists who previously studied Arctic ice, who previously drilled down into the different layers of ice that are actually there, climatologists who are examining the climate and the air quality of the planet over the past hundreds of millions of years, have previously set up little base camps on top of the ice and then drilled straight down. First of all, that's probably not the best thing to do at this point in time, because there's a lot of ice sheets that are breaking apart. There's a lot of things that are out there that are really making it harder and harder for 98.6 degree beings to sit on top of ice safely. So the idea was then put forth that these robots, these snowmotes, would have to follow this one very simple directive: expandable rover that wouldn't break a research team's bank if they were lost during an experiment. So easily expendable objects. Now these things, this concept, this one little sentence, an expendable rover that wouldn't break a research team's bank if it was lost during an experiment, needs to be handed to all of the developers and designers at NASA and say, all right, for your next Mars rover, you get an Erector set and a case of Lego Mindstorms. If you can't make it work with that, you have issues. For instance, we could send a man to the moon with the amount of power that's in a current pocket calculator, but you guys can't figure out how to do something for under $42 billion. So that's what you get to play with. But I like the idea behind it, and it's really interesting the amount of data that they can actually dig out of the ice. I mean, just think about this. Since there's actually a continent under the Antarctic ice shelf, there's a lot of really interesting things that are down there. For the different nitrogen levels, the different environmental factors that are encased, they can actually see soot levels from massive volcanic eruptions hundreds of years ago. And there's actually a giant freshwater lake that is currently sitting under all of that ice. Now, this lake has been untouched, unsullied by human hands. It is completely pristine. It is an alien environment. It has been isolated from the rest of the planet for possibly millions of years. And there was much talk, much consternation about among polar scientists about whether or not they would send a rover in there. Now, I don't know if this is the same team. But they were saying, you know, okay, we could send a rover down there, could swim around, maybe we could see if there's any kind of, you know, organisms that exist bereft of oxygen. But here's the problem, and here's why I don't support it. This is a pristine environment. We've done a pretty good job of bunging up the rest of the planet. If we found one place on the entire planet where we have not had the ability to mess it up yet, I think we should leave it alone. I think we should say, you know what, good game, Mother Earth. I think we're just going to take a step back. We're going to observe it from afar, and if it ever becomes available, cool, we'll take a look at it. But elsewise, that's yours. You keep that, we're fine. I think as soon as you break that barrier, as soon as you pop the seal on that lake, first of all, there's it is a completely alien world. When that lake was laid down, there was more nitrogen than oxygen in the air. I mean, just imagine the environment that thing's coming out of. And let's see. See what happens. If we study everything else around it, don't touch it. Come on. All right. Moving right along, because I know I could talk about that kind of stuff for hours, probably without any making very much sense. So we're just going to move right along here. Let's just say that you live currently a couple miles above the planet. Let's just say on an international space station of sorts, and you're having a slightly bad day. Well, how would you like to make it that much worse? Apparently, there's two systems for waste removal on the International Space Station, one to handle liquid waste and another one to handle solid waste. If you had to pick one of the two to fail, you'd probably pick the liquid waste, which is what actually happened. I can't imagine what would happen if the solid waste containment unit, or whatever it's called, actually failed. But apparently they had to place the liquid waste into other receptacles, special receptacles, which is probably just consisting of baggies. So there's a bunch of baggies floating outside the thing right now, and it'll probably end up, you know, crashing down to the planet at some point in time. But, you know, it's up there with all the other space junk, literally. But, it just kind of shows the rather tenuous hold we have on exploration. For instance, people keep saying, oh, why don't we put a base on the moon? Well, what happens if the pooper goes down when you're on the moon? It's not like you could necessarily throw it right out the door and it's just going to disappear. There's no decomposition, there's no atmosphere. Same thing with Mars. I mean, do you really want to be at Mars when Roto-Rooter needs to be called? Unless you're going to bring them with you, it's not really a good idea. So I don't know exactly what this is going to do. They actually fixed it. Everything's all up and running. Everything's perfectly fine at this point in time, but it's just kind of funny to think about. And then the last little thing we have here in TechCraft, I've been getting a bunch of emails about a topic we talked about a little while ago called the Zombie Plan. And I've decided that I think this is what we should do. In 3 episodes from now, we're going to produce the Caffeination publicly available zombie plan. So if you'd like to have things that you'd like to keep personal and quiet, that's fine. Keep them to yourself, no problems. That way, in case anybody actually becomes a zombie, we won't have data retention problems. But I think, you know, we should all kind of be on the same page with this thing. And I've had 2 or 3 people already send me in what they think their zombie plan should be. So you can either leave a message. You can dial 215-240-1319 and talk about it. You could Skype me at TheCaffeination and discuss. You could email me at caffeination@gmail.com. Just, we want to kind of put all these different zombie plans together and kind of come up with the lowest common denominator, the base function for what all these zombie plans should be, and probably come up with just a general consensus on what we think would be a good idea, because it would probably be easier to fight the oncoming zombie onslaught if we all kind of, you know, were on the same page. So if we're all going to meet at the local 7-Eleven, we should all do that. It'd be easier to fight the zombies if there's more of us. But then again, if one of us turns, we're pretty much up a creek. So, you know, put the 7-Eleven out there, that's fine. Put the Wawa out there. It's a local convenience store here in the Philadelphia metropolitan area. And we'll just see what happens. I mean, there's been some really fun discussion coming in. Apparently that actually struck a chord on a lot of people that really like the discussion. Figures, you know, more people actually enjoy the discussion on absolutely nothing than the people who enjoy the discussion about the news. So I just wanted to kind of put it out there. Please send in your zombie plans. We'll kind of talk about them a little bit, and we'll see exactly what's happening. All right, here into Caffeine and Food, diving right on into the fantastically yummy version of Caffeine and Food we got going here. Had a couple people actually ask me on Twitter, a little direct message problem, about what exactly I was cooking in the grill at the bottom. Well, we have two Lunda broils, we have a bunch of steak and onions, or a bunch of potatoes and onions, rather, in the tinfoil in the back, and then we have corn on the cob within the husk. And now, I used to wrap corn on the cob, both when I was in Boy Scouts and when I was, you know, cooking on my own, I used to wrap it in tinfoil after I had already husked it. And one of the people I was talking to said, why did you do that? This is a while ago now. He said, why did you do that? You know, nature gives you a perfectly fine casing to cook them in. And I thought about it and said, well, won't they burn? He said, no. The actual, when corn grows, it actually has a lot of moisture actually retained in the actual husk. So it actually steams the corn. I got to tell you, that is the best, that is the best suggestion anybody has ever given me about food. It is unbelievable when you cook corn like that. Yeah, you might have a little bit of burning on the outside. You might singe. Even they might even catch fire. Just trim all the extra leaves off. Trim the little fibers that come out the top off. And throw it right on top of the grill. After it gets nice and good and dark brown or black on the one side, flip it over, and then same thing on the other side. But there's a couple different recipes that are going to be coming out. First of all, a new steak marinade recipe. And then my recipe for potatoes and onions on the grill, and hopefully they're going to come out later on today. They might come out tomorrow at this point. I'm not really sure. And then the other thing I got to tell you, I like grilling things. I like trying new things. I like changing the way I cook food periodically. And I was rummaging through the refrigerator right before I was going to cook, and I said, oh, look, strawberries. Now, we have a particularly bitter batch of strawberries. And I was like, I love strawberries no matter what they are, so I was going to give them a try. So I said, you know what? How about this? I'll pop them on a skewer and lay them on the grill. They're the two bright red objects that you see on the left-hand side of the grill. I left them on there for the majority of the time that I was cooking. The only thing that happened to them is the leaves that were on the top kind of dried up and burned off. Other than that, they stayed surprisingly plump. The juices didn't run all out. I mean, I was using a wood skewer, and there's just two of them. And when I pulled them off, they felt like little bags of jelly. And I popped one in my mouth after it cooled off. And I got to tell you, it tasted exactly as sweet and as scrumptious as strawberry jam. It was fantastic. It cooked the bitterness right out of them. Maybe they just weren't as mature as the other strawberries we've been eating recently, but it was unbelievable. It completely congealed. It was like a pressure cooker. It completely congealed all of the stuff on the inside of the actual strawberry. I would be tempted to grill them like this and put it on a sandwich, you know, cutting open the casing and squeezing it out. That's how good this was. So I heartily suggest you give that a shot. I mean, I don't know if microwaving them would work or something like that, but hey, come on. Everybody has to have a grill, you know? We're going to be going over time here today, and I really don't care, because I think there's a lot of really useful stuff to talk about today. All right, now the next thing we have up here is actually something where you need to smack your head. I need to smack your head. This is pretty much the easiest concept that anybody's ever thought about, and it's been one of the most irritating things about being a coffee lover. If you ever go into Dunkin' Donuts, Starbucks, anything like that, and you say, you know what, I'd like three coffees, they give you the container for four, and then you have your own little travel case to go on your way. There is no way to correctly balance this travel case. They are very bad designs. You end up burning yourself. Things end up spilling over the side. They're very messy. They're very nasty. And they're not really a good way to consume anything. So I was just looking at it and said, you know what? This new design, this thing is called a coffee bag. The idea is that you sit in your two cups, so you could probably have any configuration of 2, 3, 4, 6, you know, a little six-pack of coffee or something like that. And this thing actually folds up around, creates a seal around the actual bottom of the cup, and actually folds up on either side to prevent spillage and prevent burning yourself. So it's going to be easier to fumble for keys, you know, reach for your mobile phone, any number of things here, because you have the coffee bag. It's really easy, really simple, and it's just one of those things where you have to smack yourself in the forehead and say, man, why didn't I think of that? All right, up next, we have a little bit of a guilty pleasure. Now, everybody's out there saying, oh, yeah, you know, chocolate's really good for you. No, they're not. I like chocolate in smaller pieces and everything like that, but I'm also watching what I eat. You know, a lot of other people out there are as well. How do you like chocolate that makes you feel guilty? And now there's a piece of chocolate that's put out by a company in Argentina that's actually the perfect guilty treat. They actually tell you how many calories each piece of chocolate is. This is fantastic. I love this idea. I think this is a really fun. I think this is a really fun little product that they put out there. There's no other way to say this, but it sort of makes you aware of what you're eating at the same point in time as giving you the same good chocolate. So they're all cut up into tiny different pieces, so if you'd like just a nibble, it tells you how many calories it is. I can't really see exactly all the different calorie things that are printed on there, but I think it's like 70 calories for something around as big as the top joint in your thumb. But it's just kind of easy, kind of fun to check out. Hopefully you'll like that. All right, moving back to Hackaday.com. With the recently passed holiday of Memorial Day here in the United States, there was a lot of drinking, a lot of beverages that were being made on the outside, and I decided rather than trying to link to all the different beverage creation utilities and everything out there, I would just link to the one article that seemed to take all the do-it-yourselfer things and place them into one great package. This is a beverage hack article from over at Hackaday. First of all, there's something called the Apu 3000, just a quick rundown of the products they talk about, which uses a garbage disposal, a giant 5-quart soup pot, and a wooden housing to create a massive margarita maker. Then you have your gas-powered blender, a little 2-stroke engine. Then, of course, you have the Peltier, the tiny little piezo electro device that, through some sort of magic on the inside, actually manages to chill your processor in your computer. These things actually can chill them sub-zero. I mean, you can seriously take these things down to frigid. You actually have to insulate your motherboard because it will develop frost, and frost is bad because frost is water. So that's how cold these things get. Well, how would you like to use one of them to chill your beer? I think that's a fantastic idea. They also tell you how to power your Peltier through a Cat5 Ethernet cable, also a very fun thing. But my absolute favorite hack that they have in the entire thing is a way to make Guinness beersicles. You heard me correct. I love Guinness. I think it is probably one of the most perfect beers out there. So when I found out there was a way to consume it not only cold but ice cold, I was very, very happy, obviously. They show you a way. All you have to do is put a draft can of Guinness in the freezer. It'll turn into a slush because it's pressurized and everything. It doesn't expand too much. What you do is then you pop the top, allowing for the head to form, and you cut the bottom off and stick a stick in it, and you... Either that or you poke the stick through the bottom. I'm not really sure at this point. I have to read over it again. But you put it in there, and then you put it back in the freezer. It will then, of course, freeze up because you've allowed for room for expansion and everything like that. And you then have your very own Guinness beer sickle. So I got to tell you, I think the block party is going to be fun this year. I don't know if I'm going to... I might actually need a half a case of Guinness to do that, because the other half, of course, is to fuel the actual action of making them. So we'll see if that actually works out, and I'll post up on here. Then the last little thing that we're going to talk about here in the caffeine and food section is kind of a revisitation of an older article that we talked about. We talked about this fantastic all-in-one brewing system that was made in this guy's garage here in Philadelphia. As it turned, and this product has matured beyond the garage stage, and as it turns out, the developer, John Carnett, hired one of my very good friends and his partner to actually develop the shell, develop the outside of the product. And I think they had some workings with the inner engineering associated with it as well, and they created a really fantastic design. It was just a giant project by everybody, and the resulting product is called the Nano Brewing Technologies, and I gotta hand it to the guys over at Verspor and Tremp Architectural Design Services. They did a fantastic job on the actual design of the shell of this, and the engineering and the architecture and everything that went into actually creating this fantastic little device. Obviously, you know, from the size of these things, it's probably not going to be your standard in-home brewing technology unless you are fairly wealthy. However, it's really kind of cool to see the change from one to the other. You look at the original thing, and yeah, you can make pretty much any kind of beer from soup to nuts in here. You can go from the original, the origin of it, you know, adding the hops to everything, to the actual chilling and the serving from a tap. This is a direct all-in-one solution. The only thing I don't like is I'm not really a big fan of nano brewing as a name. I understand where it's coming from. You have your breweries, you have your microbreweries, which are obviously less, and it's much more of a trendy name. Then you have your nano brewery, even smaller than that, much smaller by volume. So I like this idea. I think it's fantastic, and I gotta tell you that it's really neat to see this style of innovation. It's even Philadelphia. That's even one of even the best parts. So I mean, Carnot came up with a fantastic idea, and it was matured through the association with everybody else they worked with. And I can't wait to see this thing actually. I wonder if any of the bars that I actually visit are going to see one. I mean, that would be kind of cool. You go to your favorite bar. Mine in Philadelphia is actually called Sugar Mom's. And you go down to your favorite bar, and all of a sudden you see one of these things off to the side, and you have the brew of the week or something like that. It'd just be kind of fun to see. But all right, that about wraps it up here for Caffeination number 237. A little bit editing after the fact, and then we're gonna send you on. I'm gonna send this thing rather out into the world, let it live its own life, and gonna save before I do any of the editing, as I'm pretty sure you can understand why at this point. Thank you very much for listening to this, the Caffeination 237 Sub B Hard Labor Edition here. Of course, you can find this episode and all the other ones like it, but a little bit more timely, every Sunday and Wednesday nights, lovingly nestled over at www.caffination.com, which coincidentally enough, this being the Caffeination Podcast, that is caffeination.com. The Caffeination is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. We're also a proud Puzzle Piece production. So thank you, everybody, for your patience, and I thank you for listening. Without you, the listeners, without people who comment and feedback and all the other stuff, so thank you very much, everybody, for giving me your very precious time. I understand your time is valuable. Thank you for listening, and stay caffeinated, people.